Hello, everyone, and welcome to Once Upon a Time, the unofficial guide. I'm your host, Thomas, and I'm joined here by the incomparable
Christina.
And we're going to talk about the season premiere of Once Upon a Time, season 5. Basically, the rise of Dark Swan. Yeah, girl, what did you think?
There was just too much emotion.
I wouldn't say too much. I would say it was perfect.
No, but I mean, like a roller coaster it was. Ride of emotion.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, the pacing, everything about the show, like the pacing, the script, the amount of stuff they covered, just phenomenal. And it was all within 40 minutes. And I'm like, I hope every single episode going forward is this jam-packed full of, like, juiciness.
I think since the halfway mark of season 4, every episode has been sort of like this. You know, it's been getting closer to this mark, but this was like the bullet out of the gun episode, because like you said, every minute, I wasn't bored one minute. Not that I'm really ever bored watching Once Upon a Time, but I mean, there so many things happened in such a short time that it was hard to wrap your brain around everything that was going on and to kind of brace yourself for what was coming up next.
Yeah, definitely. I thought that every frame, every moment was deeply enjoyable. And there's some moments, like, while watching once, where you're like, okay, I can't wait for them to get back to this. But this was just perfectly, you know, thought out. And we learned a few things. Where do you want to start with that? Do you just want to go forward and talk about the Dark Swan? Or should we wait?
It's up to you. I'm down either way.
We're assuming that you guys out there have already seen the episode, so let's talk about...
So no spoiler alerts.
Yeah.
I was very glad that they chose to make Emma's eyebrows not white. They went with a more realistic-looking color than in the promo pictures, and for which I was profoundly grateful. Mm-hmm. I loved that braided bun in her hair. Yeah. That costume was amazing. The kind of grayish,
shabby,
like shabby chic coat.
It looked almost really comfortable too.
Yeah, I mean, you could totally tell it was something that a wizard would wear, and reminded me of like Lord of the Rings, Gandalf the Grey.
Yeah,
and since she was wearing the gray, because she hadn't fully
darkened.
Right.
She was on the other color spectrum. I loved the few glimpses we got to see of her as the Dark One towards the end of the episode. I loved her characterization too. I loved how she moved and spoke, and not only was with hair and makeup and costuming was she very svelte and like just like clean cut lines and all that stuff, but the way she moved was almost mechanical, almost inhuman. And I thought it, part of it reminded me of Terminator a little bit for some odd reason, I don't know, but I liked it. It was like she was
an automaton.
Yeah, like she was totally consumed by it, and I thought it was very mysterious, basically.
Only this time she's a black crocodile. According to that code at the very end.
Right. Which is also interesting, because is she black because she's taken on all of the darkness that was released, or is she like that dark, that black, because it's the polar opposite from being the savior?
I mean, even when Rumpel would wear his crocodile type outfits, they were mostly brown. Some were green, others were brown, but I never really saw too much, you know, sheer black.
Yeah, it was very earthy. So I'm wondering why they chose to go that route. Is it because, basically, Emma seems like a character who is, operates in extremes,
mm-hmm.
so the savior, and always going to be, you know, she's the product of true love, has
right.
light magic, and now the dark one, since she's something, someone that's extreme, would be, you know, completely black. I don't know.
Well, even the color scheme with her entire body,
mm-hmm.
white hair, black clothes,
mm.
showing the dynamic of the light and the darkness mm-hmm. in her as we speak, because they said, like, some moments the darkness would overtake her, other moments the lightness would overtake her.
Mm.
So I think, you know, that dichotomy plays well into
the way she looks.
The way she yeah. looks, yeah.
Yeah.
You want to get into Camelot now?
Let's talk about...
There's so much to so talk much. About with Camelot.
Yeah.
As soon as they pulled out Excalibur from the stone, I knew exactly what piece was missing off there. I knew it was the Dark One dagger.
Now, did you know at, like, when he pulled it out all the way, or as he was releasing Excalibur, did you already know that the dagger was part of it?
I knew there was going to be something wrong, but mm-hmm. I didn't know what.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew it would just be too easy for it to, I don't know, be complete, or I didn't know if it would be yet another fake Excalibur,
mm-hmm.
like the one that Rumpelstiltskin had given to Snow White.
Right.
But I knew something was amiss.
Yeah. And it's also something to link us with Emma and, you know, how they prophesized that they or how they were searching for Emma and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So
because Arthur said that Merlin had told him that he would meet Emma
yeah.
in that spot, which is yeah. kind of cool. The wand of the apprentice was forged from both light and dark magic.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder who forged that wand.
Yeah. I wonder, I was thinking about that too. I'm like, is there anything that's just organic, like just organically forms?
Because
mm-hmm. that to me is more powerful than somebody forging a wand or whatever that has this immense power. To me, it would be a better, it would be a stronger plot line if, let's say, someone harnessed, you know, this power, or this power was generating someplace, and someone had already, you know, created the wand, and the wand just, it served as like a lightning rod.
Well, and finding out who forged these items, I mean, we saw a couple seasons back with Pandora's Box that Rumpel had it, but we don't know where he got it. It was just in his pawn shop.
Yeah. Yeah.
I loved the castle. Totally taken from Disneyland.
Yeah.
And Camelot.
It looks just like Sleeping Beauty Castle in Disney California, which was based off of a castle in Europe someplace.
In Germany,
yeah.
The Neuschwanstein Castle.
Thank you.
In Bavaria,
yeah.
Germany.
Yeah. So I thought that was really, really clever. And the green screen
mm-hmm.
was seamless in
yes.
that scene. I was very, very impressed. I feel like this episode was great because they didn't rely so much on special effects,
because
mm-hmm. I noticed the more reliant an episode is, the cheaper the effects look, because, you know, they don't have a whole lot of time to turn it
right.
around and all that. So I thought, this is great, you know.
And I have to say, I love Regina's Camelot dress. The red velvet.
Yes. Yes.
She looked fabulous. They all did.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited to see what they're going to do next. Because they're all looking for Merlin in the Enchanted Forest. But I have a feeling he's not going to be in the Enchanted Forest.
Mm.
Because we saw at the beginning of the episode that he was in Minnesota in 1989.
My whole question is, so once they find out what happened, are they then going to find Merlin? Are they going to know where to look? Or does he care? Is he going to stay clear?
I think he does care, and honestly, I think Merlin has been in Storybrooke since the beginning, since the inception of the show. Yeah. I think he was the original wolf that Emma saw the first night she was trying to leave Storybrooke. I think he was also the wolf that she saw when she was on her way to come back from getting Lily. And I think he's taken different forms throughout the entire series. We just haven't recognized him as such. And I think he's still in Storybrooke or has come to Storybrooke now. And that's why they came back after 6 weeks. And that's why they failed, because he wasn't in Camelot. He was in Storybrooke and they just didn't know.
Right. I want to know why he is so invested in Emma's life.
Yes. Well, we know from last season that the apprentice told Lily and Emma both that their lives were intertwined.
Yeah. But, I mean, what do these people have to gain, I guess you could say? I mean, unless Emma truly is more influential to everyone's lives in Storybrooke and all these magical realms than any of us realize, then I can't really see, like, why is Merlin so, like, why has he been paying attention to this character? There's tons of magical characters that have, you know, these far-reaching destinies that they have to fulfill, but why is he, like, jumping into Emma's life and trying to intervene and all of this stuff
and using the apprentice to reach out to Lily exactly. as well.
That's what I want to know. And or is he some omniscient figure where he may jump into Emma's life in one moment and then go into appear in someone else's life mm-hmm. in the next?
Why is he now in Storybrooke? Mm-hmm. How did he come to our world?
Yeah.
How did the apprentice come into our world?
Yeah.
Also,
I mean, he came into our world and he was using magic.
Mm-hmm. Because he automatically disappeared as soon as he was done telling Emma what she needed to know mm-hmm. about not taking Excalibur out of the stone. So is Emma going to reforge Excalibur and reunite the Dark One's dagger with Excalibur? And will that in itself be the key to undoing the darkness within herself? Will that finally rid the universe once and for all of all this darkness that the Dark Ones have right. had?
But, and this is the other thing that's bugging me, is like all these characters seem to miss the necessity of having dark to balance out the light.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, your lives are kind of set up to be like a fight, like a battle against good and evil, but in regular life, like yours and mine, like without it, there's no appreciation for what's good. There's no sense of morality, because then it becomes homogeneous.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the other, a lot of the themes that they're putting forth and addressing in the show, like one's destiny and one's true self, are kind, and then also darkness and evil,
mm-hmm.
they're kind of almost innocuous, because they're superficial, because on one end you're like, oh, that's a noble thing to say, be true to yourself, but philosophically you can never really figure out what is your core essence.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the show is just like kind of not delving deep enough with that.
Yes, I agree. One of the things that I thought was hilarious is when Hook tells Regina, how's this for Ernie? You've done too much good. When they were talking about referring to why the apprentice's wand wouldn't work when Regina was trying to open up a portal because they needed her sister too.
Yeah, I thought that was hilarious too. She's gone too light, too soft.
I love it. And our queen is good now.
I love how she's still sassy.
Yes.
You know?
Well, he said that she still had the fire. She just didn't have the brimstone to back it up. And then Regina tells Zelina that she can still deliver a baby without a tongue. I was like, yes, too. You go, girl.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She needs her comeuppance, and right. Now.
I liked the fact that when Henry says and effectively defies his mom,
Regina.
Yeah. And says, well, you know, I'm no longer a boy. I could do what I want. And it backfires. I'm like, that will learn ya, mm-hmm. kid. I just thought that moment was so, I don't know. It was a brilliant moment of karma, because this is what you get when you go behind
your parents' back. Obey your parents.
Yeah.
I kind of wanted to bring this up. When Zelena goes to the Charming's apartment, posing as Regina, and she tells Robin that he is the key to everything for her, I'm wondering if it meant merely more than just getting the wand to take her back to Oz, or is there something deeper there, and is she truly pregnant?
Right, because...
And she's still, and Robin is the key to everything for her, because she still needs him to impregnate her.
Yeah, because, yeah, we don't believe that she's pregnant. We believe that
she's faking it.
We'll probably talk about this in a future episode, but we think she's faking it. And
we're praying she's faking it.
Yeah, that too. And you mentioned earlier, before we started recording, that when they were poofed back into Storybrooke, Zelena didn't look like she was showing. And this is how many weeks later?
From the time they left in Granny's until they came back, it was 6 weeks. And I mean, even if she wasn't that far along, you would still expect to see some kind of a baby bump.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't, for the brief glimpse that we got of her, it didn't look like anything was showing at all.
Yeah, so I think the key to her happiness is, you know, finding a baby daddy.
But I guess we'll see whether or not she's really pregnant, because I know Regina told her in the season finale of season 4 that she'd be going with her to the doctor appointment, so I guess we'll see if nothing shows up on the sonogram, but then again, she could use her magic to make it look like there's a baby on the sonogram.
But she's still gonna get that baby cooking.
Right?
And I mean, babies don't do well in hostile environments.
No, they don't.
And her little environment's probably the most hostile.
I would say so. Out of anyone on that show...
Girl.
Her womb is a hostile womb.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I found it interesting at the beginning of the show, or the episode, Regina is wearing a black crescent moon necklace. And in season 4, we know that Lily had told Emma to go back to her boyfriend's place and get her necklace. And we find out that the necklace is also a crescent moon. And that was the only thing she had from her birth mother, which we know is Maleficent. So did Maleficent and Regina both have matching or, you know, crescent moon necklaces to, like, as a symbol of their friendship? Mm-hmm. Is there anything that's going to come of that?
Yeah.
Just throwing that out there to see if, you know.
Did we'll we ever get something. To see what Maleficent's necklace looked like?
We did. And it was,
It similar
to a crescent-shaped moon, but it wasn't black.
Okay.
So, okay. We'll see. I'll go back and rewatch it just to verify.
Okay.
But...
True that. All right, so I'm going to wrap this up. All right, Thomas and Christina signing off, and see you next week.